I had tried everything, and nothing seemed to work. It was with my second daughter. Her name is Carly. She's grown now. But shortly after she started walking, she figured out how to get out of her bed, come downstairs, and then hop in our bed, for Stacy and I, in our bedroom, hop in our bed, and then sleep there for the rest of the night. Now, at first, I admit it was cute, right? I mean, it was just kind of cute. She would come in, that door would pop open, and she'd have that sleepy-eyed look, and she would crawl up in the bed and snuggle up between us, and so it was great. But eventually, it did get a little old, because it happened literally every night almost. I'm not sure if there was a night that it didn't. And we tried everything. I mean, we would lock our bedroom door, and sometimes she would stand outside and beat on the door and, you know, trying to get in. We tried putting, you know, gates up at the top of the stairway, and she'd stand there and scream and yell until we finally would come and get her. I mean, we tried everything. So finally, one day, I'd been thinking about it, and I thought, okay, I have an idea. So I told Stacy, I said, I have this idea, and I'm going to, I think I've come up with a solution to solve this problem. So I brought Carly and her oldest sister, Reagan, who's our first child. And Reagan was 3 years or so older than Carly, three and a half years or so older than Carly. And so I brought them in the kitchen, and I made this chart on this big poster board kind of thing. And the chart had lines on it, and it had the days of the week: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then it had the weekend. And they each day had a little block. And one line was for Reagan, the other line was for Carly. And I said, guys, we're going to play a game. I've got this thing here. And so here's what we're going to do. Every night that you stay in your bed and you don't get out of your bed, you sleep in your bed all night long. I mean, if you wake up, as long as you stay in your room, then you're going to get a star the next morning. And if you get 5 stars in a row, in other words, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, then on the weekend, Friday night or Saturday, I will take you to the toy store and you can pick out whatever you want. And of course, I told Stacy about it. She said, so you're trying bribery. And I said, that's right. I'll try anything at this point. Now, here was the thing. I was also using a little bit of peer pressure, because Reagan, when I mentioned it to her, she was like, oh yeah, I love this game, because she never got out of her bed. So she was like, so I just keep doing what I'm doing. I get a star every day and I get a toy for the weekend. This is awesome. So she did her deal and she was all in. And so Carly got, you know, motivated and was like, yep, okay, I'm gonna do it. She saw Reagan's enthusiasm, and so I thought, this is gonna work. So the very first night, put the chart up, told the kids, said, all right, you remember, here's what we're going to do. And so they went to bed, middle of the night. I hear a door open. I hear the pitter-patter of little feet. I see our bedroom door open, and it's Carly. And I look at her and I say, Carly, you remember, if you jump in this bed, then you will not get a star tomorrow morning, and therefore you will not get a toy at the end of the week. And she looked at me, and she looked me right in the eye, and she said, yeah, I know, Dad, and I don't care. And she hopped up in the bed. Stacy obviously looked at me and said, your plan's working. Your plan's really working well. So I said, just hold on. We'll see how the week goes. So as the week went, Carly, no star, no star, no star. Reagan, star, star, star. So it was a Friday night or Saturday night. I can't remember. Maybe a Friday night. And we were at our local mall, and we were eating at a restaurant there, and we finished up, and Fletcher was our third child was still an infant, and Ellie had not been born yet, but Fletcher was an infant. And so we were there, and he was, you know, perhaps in a high chair or something. So we finished eating dinner, and Reagan said, Dad, can we go and walk around to the toy store and let me pick out my toy? And I said, sure. And so Carly looked at me and said, Dad, can I go? And I said, Carly, you know the deal. You know, you can't get a toy because you didn't stay in your bed. So I thought, okay, you know, it's going to be a little pain for her, but this is part two of the plan. So Carly said, Dad, I don't want anything. I promise. I won't ask you to buy me anything. I just want to go look. Right. Famous last words. But I gave in, said, okay, let's go. So we headed off to the store. We got in there. Reagan was looking around, and then all of a sudden, you know what happened. Carly found something that she absolutely couldn't live without. And so she picked it up. She brought it to me. Dad, please buy this for me. Please, I promise I'll never get out of my bed again. I promise next week I'll stay in my bed every single night. This will make me so happy, Dad. I mean, this will make me, you will be the best dad of all times. This will make me the happiest little girl you've ever seen. So I brought her out in the middle of the mall. They had these little benches, and we sat down, and I got down to her level, and I said, I put my little fingers up, and I said, you look me right in the eye. You know, you tell me you are not getting out of your bed, right? She said, I won't, Dad. I promise I won't. So I broke down, and I bought it for her. And I bought Reagan's, obviously, and we walked back in the restaurant, and Carly has her toy, and she's smiling from ear to ear. And Stacy looks at me and says, your plan's really working. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you're going with this, but so far, it's you know, it's pretty interesting. So I looked at her and said, just hold on. I've got a part three, a plan C. So we get home. We're driving home. Carly, what are you going to do? I'm staying in my bed, Dad. I'm not getting out of my bed. So we go in, we get ready for bed, brush our teeth. I'm tucking them in. I'm in Carly's room. She's got her little stuffed animal. It's in the kind of the crook of her arm, and she's, you know, holding on to it. And she's under her covers. And I said, Carly, now, you know you cannot get out of your bed. And she said, Dad, I won't. I'll never get out of my bed again. This little stuffed animal you bought for me makes me so happy. I'm so happy. There's no way I would get out of my bed again. So I thought, okay. So I shut the door, went down. Stacy and I, you know, a little bit later, we went to bed, and we're laying in the bed, and guess what happened? And more on that in just a minute. Hi, I'm Tim Riddle. Welcome to the Discover Blind Spots podcast. We're at episode 21. We're in the twos now, the 20s. So episode 21, thanks for listening if you've been doing that. We're in a series where we're talking about leadership fruits. Now, what does that mean? You know, what I don't know. I understand what leadership is. I understand what fruit is, but what the heck does leadership fruits mean? We're actually following along Galatians 5, verse 22 and 23, and where it lists nine fruits, or you might say nine values. And you might say, well, wait a minute, why are we doing scripture stuff? You know, I thought that was in church. I thought this was a leadership, you know, blind spot podcast, you know, where we look at our blind spots and try to figure out how to become better leaders and so forth. And the answer to that question, it is. But listen to this list. You might say, you know, I'm not a Bible person. Just listen to this list. Here are the nine. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, whether you read scripture or not, have a faith that you stand on or not, who wouldn't want to work for a leader who embodied these values, right? I mean, scripture is filled with leadership principles that you can apply to your everyday life and certainly to your workplace. Now, let me get back to the story with my daughter, Carly. So it's about, I don't know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I remember it was the middle of the morning, you know, and I was dead asleep. But all of a sudden, I woke up. It was like instantly I woke up. And I think it was God's way of just sort of chuckling at me. And so I heard the door open. I heard the pitter-patter of little feet. And I heard her coming down the steps. And I thought, here we go. I wonder what this is about. And so waited a few seconds. And then the next thing that happened, our bedroom door flew open. And there's Carly. She has her stuffed animal in her hand, and she looks at me and says, hey, Dad, I've thought about this. I don't want this anymore. And she throws it on the ground and she hops up in the bed with us. Now, what's the illustration? What's the point of that little story? Happiness is a temporary emotion. I mean, she was happy for just a few hours, but that little stuffed animal that was supposed to make her happy was a very temporary feeling. It ran out of power somewhere in the middle of the night. Now, if you're wondering, if you're thinking, I don't know about that. I mean, happiness is a pretty good thing, and I'm in search for happiness. And, you know, we have this thing, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Let me just tell you, think of all the things that you purchased in your life that you thought would make you happy. Think of those things. You bought them because you said, boy, I'd love to have that. That would really make me happy to have that. So now's the question. Now here's another question. Do you still have them? Or are they now, or were they sold in a yard sale? Or are they out in your garage stored, maybe up in your attic stored? Now, I don't doubt maybe they made you happy at some point, but the happiness feeling that it gave you eventually wore off. It's a temporary emotion. So people who chase happiness usually end up chasing it for their entire lives. They never, ever get to the pot of gold. They never reach the end of the rainbow. Whereas happiness is like playing the game and just trying to get touchdowns. Like if you're in a football game and you're playing the game and you're trying to, you know, it's just like, what's the goal, coach? Hey, we just want to get touchdowns. We just want to get touchdowns. Joy is when you focus on the bigger prize, which is actually winning the game. Now, I know you can't win the game without getting a few touchdowns, but you can get touchdowns, right, and still lose the game if the other team scores more than you do. The idea of joy is a longer look. It's a longer plan. And usually you find that in someone that is more mature and seasoned in their leadership. Those are the kind of people you want to build a relationship with. Those are the kind of people you would love to work for. Those are the kind of organizations, companies you would love to work for. The leader who is focused on happiness, here's what usually happens. They only come around when things are good or when they want or need something. A leader who's focused on joy is a leader that you can count on in the good times and also in the bad. Now, you may ask this question, isn't happiness a part of joy? Absolutely. But if we focus just on happiness, we may never experience the deeper feeling of meaning and purpose that joy brings. For example, I said this in the video that we posted yesterday. Several months ago, our first grandchild was born. Her name's Adelaida. And Adelaida, Reagan, our oldest daughter, was pregnant, obviously, and had Adelaida towards the end of August of this year. And the cool thing about the story is Reagan, if you know our family, Reagan was diagnosed with cancer, Hodgkin's lymphoma, her senior year in college, and then it came back, and she had 6 months of chemo and radiation. It came back her second year of law school, and she had a bone marrow transplant, and she got married a little over a year ago, now. And the doctors told her, you know, hey, just want to let you know, you don't have to worry about birth control because you won't be able to get pregnant with all the treatment you've had and so forth. Well, in February of this year, of 2019, Reagan found out she was pregnant. And so Adelaida is our miracle baby. And so Adelaida brings our entire family great joy. I can have a terrible day, the worst day you could imagine. But if Adelaida comes over, or if I put her in my arms, I have this phenomenal feeling of joy. The other morning, I had 1,000 things to do, and Adelaida was at the house, spent the night with us. And it was a Saturday morning. I was going to have to work all day, and I was sitting on the couch, and Stacy needed to do something. She said, could you hold Adelaida for just a minute while I do X, Y, and Z? And my first reaction was, I got things to do. I mean, I really, and I said, sure. And she curled up in my arms, and I looked at her, and it set the tone for the entire day, which was a day of joy. She's just a reminder of us, of God's blessings. Now, I want to give you two illustrations to maybe help you with this idea of searching for joy. Think of a Nerf ball, you know, the Nerf ball that you can squeeze, and, you know, kind of squeeze it and so forth. We think happiness will make things different in our lives. We think happiness will kind of make us a different person. If we could just, you know, move here, get this job, whatever, I'll be a different person. You know, if I could, you know, get out of this relationship or marry that person or whatever, I'll be different. I'll be a totally different person if this could just happen. If I could accomplish this, eliminate that problem, whatever, get rid of that obstacle. It'll just change everything. So every time one of those things happens that brings you this temporary feeling of happiness, kind of consider it's sort of like you grab hold of the Nerf ball and you squeeze it a little bit, all right? And we start to, you know, the Nerf ball looks different, right? It's half the size because you've kind of, you're squeezing it down, and so it's a smaller ball, maybe in the fist of your hand. But as soon as that happiness feeling fades and you let go of your fist, what happens? The Nerf ball goes back to its original shape. So in essence, nothing has really happened. The reshaping of the look of that Nerf ball was a temporary experience. And that's what happiness does in our lives. Now, you may say, well, that temporary fix is not bad at times. I understand that. But I'm just telling you, it's a quick fix. We're a quick fix society. And if your search stops at happiness, it's like being on a roller coaster, just going up and down and up and down. Here's another illustration. If I had two envelopes, and both of them are sealed, but I've written on the outside what is on the inside. The first one says that there's $1. The second one says inside there's $10 million. And here's the deal. I'm going to give you one of the envelopes in 6 months. In 6 months, you're going to get one or the other. So let's start with the dollar envelope. If I promise to give it to you at the end of 6 months, I say, you know what, you're going to get this envelope. It's got $1 in it. So here's my question. Will you live your life any different as a result of knowing that in 6 months, you can open that $1 envelope? Of course not. In fact, you might even forget about it, in the 6 months and just, you know, throw it away or stick it in a drawer and, you know, just it'd be kind of out of sight, out of mind. Now, let's move to the other envelope. If you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that in 6 months, you could open the $10 million envelope, would you live your life any different in the next 6 months? Well, sure you would. I mean, if you're honest, sure you would. You'd probably begin to think about the things that you're going to do with that money. You might pay off a few bills. You might buy a house, think about buying a new car, or even taking a nice trip. You'd probably put some of the money away for the future. You'd start planning about, well, I'm going to put, you know, so much money in this account and so much in that account and so forth. Well, what if you were driving home today and you knew you're going to get that $10 million in that second envelope? You're driving home today and your car broke down. Would that ruin your day? Probably not. You know why? Because in 6 months, you're going to replace that old stinking car. For you see, the promise of what happens in 6 months would create great financial joy, and your daily financial struggles would not rob you of that joy anymore. So you see, joy is taking the long look. Now, for me, that long look, I'm a Christ follower. So for me, that's the long look. That's the envelope that I get excited to see. The envelope that I'll get to open one day that gives me permanent joy. That no matter how bad my day, how high my happiness is, or how much happiness I have, or how little happiness I have, that's what gives me permanent joy that I can have on good days and on bad days. Does it make it easy? Heck no. I didn't say it was easy, but I can't imagine living my life and not having that envelope to look forward to. And trust me, that envelope is far greater than an envelope of $10 million, the value. So it's okay. Let me wrap up with this. It's okay to search for a little happiness along the way. I'm not trying to rain on the rain on the happiness parade. It's okay. In fact, I like to call that in my business, I like to call it celebrating the small wins. And that's important to do. Sometimes we, as entrepreneurs and leaders, we forget to celebrate the small wins because we're always thinking about the next thing. Let me tell you how I do that. Every week, at the end of the week, I have a journal and I write it in every day. On Sunday evenings, I have a section in my journal that basically I write the word gratitude. And under that title, I reflect on the past week and I write down everything that happened in the past week that I could consider to be grateful for. It could be a conversation. It could be a person. It could be an interaction. It could be some business that I got. It could be something with my family. Whatever. I just write it down. Let me admit to you that most of the time when I do this exercise and I'm getting ready to do that, I think, well, it's going to be a short list this week, because I can't think of anything. The problem is that we purge those things. So I go back and I look at each day, my journal and kind of my interactions and my calendar. I go back and look at the week, look at Saturday and Friday and, back up until, Monday of that week. And I always end up filling up the page of things that I can be grateful for. So to me, that's celebrating the short wins, the small wins. Do those things make me happy? Absolutely they do. But the point I'm trying to make is don't stop there. Don't stop with just the little wins. Remember, the little wins is what leads to the biggest win, that large envelope hope day that you hope one day that you can open. If your search for meaning and purpose is only focused on happiness, you'll struggle to find it because it's temporary. Take that long view. Search for things that bring you joy, things that will last, things that you can hold on to on the lowest of days. For me, as I told you, it's my faith. My faith first, my family second. So what is it for you? I mean, take some time and think about that. A leader filled with joy is a leader people will want to follow. So that's it for today. Next week, we're going to talk about the fruit of peace, love, joy, peace. So we're going to spend some time on that. Let me just tell you, who doesn't want, in today's world, who doesn't want a little more peace in their life? See you next week.